Welcome to this audio presentation. My name is Dr. Scott Taransky.
And I'm Joanne Miller. We represent the National Center for Biblical Parenting. Our goal is to help parents and churches have the tools they need to work with children, helping children address their hearts, not just their behavior.
Now, this presentation you're about to listen to was recorded before a live audience. So let's go and listen to exactly what this presenter has to say.
I am Frieda Doxy, and my topic is Love Never Fails, Parenting Children with Difficult Behaviors. You just join me in prayer. Thank you, Father, for the opportunity to represent you as parents who are seeking to know how to use love instead of fear in dealing with difficult behaviors that we perceive in our children. I thank you for how you're going to teach us individually and collectively as believers, as parents, with our own set of children that you've blessed us with. And we just thank you for our hearts are ready to receive it, and our hands and our soul and our spirits ready to go out and utilize some of the tools, techniques, and skills that you will be teaching us today. So we just thank you for that, Father. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you. I'm Frieda. Would you just please just tell me who you are and age of your children? I have two girls, 10 and 8. Actually, they'll be turning 9 and 11. 9 this month and 11 for next month. My husband is a pastor. His name is Gentry. We live here in Georgia, Stone Mountain, Georgia, so we took a 40-minute drive down here. So my husband's a pastor. I've been pastoring here in Georgia for 12 years. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. I had a private practice working full-time, but that interfered with being a mom and being a wife. So I put that on the side and only take special cases or work with special families, people who really need it, as opposed to just anybody and everybody, like I was doing before. So that's pretty much what I do. I work with families, individual. We do couples counseling, couples ministry as well. What you have before you is a handout. I thought you should have something. What I'm going to cover on the PowerPoint is going to be a little bit different. However, you won't get the PowerPoint. What you have in your hand is something that's going to be very helpful. We'll touch base on most of what you have in your handout. So as he's working on that, I will go ahead and go through what we're going to look at. One thing that has been a general theme throughout the conference, even last night and today, is a paradigm shift. And I believe that is happening all over as we take a look at families and take a look at parenting, what we're doing, why we're doing it. And I would like to submit to you that the traditional view hasn't really worked for us. And as you're hearing more and more heart-based parenting, what we do is love-based parenting. Even on the site with Dr. James Dobson, and everybody is going towards what the Word of the Lord, I believe, is teaching us, and that is love. Based parenting and how to do that, as well as discipline. The founders of love-based parenting are Heather Forbes and Dr. Brian Post. They have been working with foster parents, adoptive parents, and the grandparents as well on how to work with children with difficult behaviors. He started this out 20-some years ago, and through his work and doing intensive family parenting training, he found out that there is a great need for love-based parenting, that the fear-based doesn't work. So the book that this parenting is based on is called Beyond the Consequences, Beyond the Logic, and Beyond the Control, How to Use Love-Based Parenting to Work with Our Children. Consequences doesn't work. Stickers and rewards, they have their place, albeit logic, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up to why they're doing what they do. As the speaker said this morning, how can the daughter on the outside be the wonderful daughter and get the call from the parent, oh, you have the great daughter, she's just marvelous. And yet when she comes home, is, what are you doing? Do what I say do. You know, there's disobedience. So the logic doesn't work, and control definitely doesn't work. I'm the parent, you do what I say do. Because I'm the oldest, and I'm the grown up, and you're the child. Control doesn't work either. And all of those are based mostly on fear. And then we're going to take a look at, really, there are two emotions, love and fear. The Bible brings up over 500 scriptures on love. To me, I went to Bible's college, so it says it's something mentioned a whole lot, pay attention. So love is a theme from Genesis through Revelation. And in the Old Testament alone, you have over 300 passages on love. And the Hebrew word for love is hesed love, which is a royal love that God demonstrated. And then when you get to the New Testament, the agape love, which is our church name, Agape Christian Family Church, is that unconditional love that Jesus shared for us and that he died on the cross that we could be saved from our sins. So love is the theme. And so taking what God said we are to do, that's what this particular parenting style is based on. So you see on this, on your second page here, is that parenting is not about who your children will become. It's about who you become. And love-based parenting is all about we as parents taking a look at ourselves. You know, I've had too many parents come to my practice and fix my daughter, fix my son, fix my children. And just as sure as I begin to talk about, well, let's look at you, mom and dad. Well, I'm not the problem. It's Tommy. If Tommy would just follow instruction, we will be a happy family. If Susie would just do what I ask her to do, we will be okay. And I can tell you time after time that I've had one lady walked out of the session because she refused to take a look at herself. So we got to look at who we're becoming. Your children will follow your lead to become all they are designed to be. I like how the speaker even talked about, we're talking about a paradigm shift, looking through different lenses. I had to admit I went to the doctor, the eye doctor, and, you know, I'm over 40. I'm actually 51. So they say 50 is the new 30, right? All those 50 agree. And he said, Miss Doxy, you need night vision glasses. I said, what is night vision glasses? I mean, come on, shouldn't one pair do it? He said, well, you know, the light is hurting your eyes and so forth and so on. So I get these yellow tinted glasses. And unfortunately, my daughters they know I have two pairs. And so when I'm driving at night, mommy, don't you need your night vision glasses? So I have to wear the night vision so the light is not hurting so much. And just to use it as an illustration about how there's a paradigm shift and got to put on new lenses. What I will present to you today is going to be a challenge, and I believe that you're here because you want the help and you're willing to receive the help that's going to we're going to present today. And one of the things that many of you are familiar with, I went the wrong way, right? Is the FedEx. How many knew there was an arrow in FedEx? I never knew that until about 4 years ago. You did? Very few people did. And then, as a matter of fact, someone must have told FedEx, and they began to advertise it on all their trucks. So now on some of the trucks, you'll see the arrow highlighted. And all that is saying is that we saw it one way, but actually there was always an arrow in FedEx. And there's always, the Word of God has always been present for us to know how to do parenting and how to do it well. So as we move through the paradigm shift, we got to realize that we all come with our own blueprint. We all made a certain way. We have our personality. We have our set ways of doing things. And we got to acknowledge where we are as parents first before we can begin to address our children. And that blueprint could be either we see ourselves as a rundown shack, or we may see ourselves as the humongous castle on top of the hill. But we must acknowledge that we all come with a blueprint. And when we're married and there's a couple, so we know that our children have a little bit of me and a little bit of my husband. And God is so great that he always has one child who's just like me. Anybody can attest to that. One child just acts just like you. And usually that is the child where we have the most difficulties. Because I see myself in my Candace is her name. And my husband's daughter is, his child is heaven. She is fun all over the place. Everybody is wonderful. Everybody loves me. Hey, here I am. You know, it's kind of like Kirk talks about the son that's running upstairs and they're having family time. Well, that's my Kevin. She's, hey, I know. And she knows exactly what's going on. And I have to, Candace is like Frida is, sit down, be, you know, don't move. This is the way we're doing things. And I have to adjust. So there's a blueprint that we all have, and we must realize that what our children also have that blueprint. I want to talk about the stress model. One of the things I find out, and this is what Brian came up with, was the stress model. We must acknowledge stress in our life and the impact of stress on our lives. We have become who we've become because of stress. So there's a stress model. You'll notice it says behavior arises from stress. And in between stress and behavior, you're going to have this. You're going to have the behavior, but in between that, you're going to have your stress. What triggers that stress? Tell me, what is the number one stressor for you? Anybody? Homework time. Yes, ma'am. Disobedience. Oh, you're talking my language. Yes, the sibling. Yeah. Trying to keep up with it again. Oh, gosh, yes. My calendar is overflowing. Yes, behind the ball. Yes, lying. Oh, that hurts. Disrespect. So we got these events. It creates stress in us, right? And in between there's the emotion. How do you feel when the child disrespects you? Angry. How do you feel when you're behind that ball? Panic. How do you feel when there's lying? Disappointed. How do you feel when they don't want to do the homework? Frustrated. Yes. So we got to identify the feelings and the emotion, because that'll drive our behavior. Like I said, there are two feelings, two emotions. There's love and there's fear. How would someone in love respond to, I don't want to do my homework, I'll do it later? How would a loving parent respond to that? You say, that's why we're taking this class, Brita. Duh. Whiteboard time. This is going to help. I get that all the time. Let's talk about, what does love look like? Patience, right? What else? Gentleness. Encouragement. Kind. Compassion. More? Okay. Discipline. Consistency. Self-sacrifice. Oh, ouch. Keeping the record of wrong is love?
No record.
Oh, okay. Keeping no record of wrong. This is just an example of what love looks like. We know what love looks like, right? We know it. We just talked about it right there. It looks like patience. So when I don't want to do my homework, patience. When I don't want to clean my room, oh, gentleness. When I'm lying, self-sacrifice. Ooh, ouch. Remember 1 Corinthians chapter 13? The love chapter. Love is what? Kind. Someone made a beautiful song out of it too. Looks good in paper, in our Bibles. Sounds beautiful when we can sing it a cappella, but now we have to do it. As my daughter said, Mom, love is an action verb, not a verb. That's fifth grade stuff. I said, I thought love was a verb. She said, no, it's an action verb. That means you have to do something. So we see what love looks like. And what about fear? What does fear look like? Panic, loss of control, nice. Impulsive, distant, nice. So here we have two lists. This is what love looks like, and we know it, and we know what fear looks like. How many times when they don't do the homework, you panic? And so when I panic, so I got stressed, not doing the homework, I get stressed, emotion, I panic. Behavior is what? What did I do? Yell at them. Do your homework, you're going to do it now. Because you're going to fail. And if you fail, then you're not going to go to high school. If you don't go to high school, you're definitely not going to college. And I'm not going to get a scholarship. If you don't get a scholarship, then you're just going to grow up to be nothing. And you're not going to stay in my house. What did fear just do? Fear took me from the 12-year-old to I perceive him or her at, what, 25, doing what? Hey, Mom, give me something to drink, Mom. Feed me, Mom. Wash my clothes. That's what fear did. So when I'm lying, right, the stress, child lies, emotion is fear, which is what? Anxiety, maybe. Now, what do I do? What's my behavior? So what do I look like as a parent? You lie to me. Oh, my God, anxiety. How many times have you lied to me before? This is not the first time you lie. Every time you say something, you lie. I can't trust you. What are you doing? What's on your phone? Why are you going there? Who is she? Where did she come from? I don't believe you're doing that. The teacher didn't say that. So what did anxiety just do? From 0 to 60 in 30 seconds. And then how does a child feel? Who wants to be a child? Stressed, unloved. How do your children feel? Just think about it. Give up. Can't make mistakes. Have to manage your anxiety. Can't trust you. Empowered in some way. Afraid of you. So what we got going on is what I call the negative feedback loop. Do your homework. I'm not doing my homework right now. Can I do it later? Oh, you know, you're going to do it later, but I got something else to do later. You always yell at me. Stop yelling at me. Negative feedback. There's a loop. And somewhere down the line, it has to stop. And who's responsible for stopping it?
Yeah.
There was a quiet that fell over the... Who's supposed to change it? We are. We talked about being overwhelmed, right? That's what fear looks like. Pain. Okay? Fear and stress create blocked feelings that can inhibit growth, inhibit learning, and the building of a trusting relationship between the parent and the child. Neurobiologists have proven over and over again that when the brain is stressed, it actually locks down and it goes into what we call a state. Thank you. Sorry about that. It goes into a state memory. So when that child says, or is disobedient, I call it a drawer. There's four drawers. a memory, and the bottom is state. That's the level of memory that I feel like I'm in a situation that I was in the past, and my response will be the same. So when there's disobedience, I feel like, oh my God, this feels like when I was disobedient to my parent and she was staring at me and yelling at me, and all I could do was freeze, and there's my mom doing it, but I'm the mother now. And so here I am going, oh, I remember when I was disobedient to my mom and how she yelled at me, so I'm going to yell at you. So it's like an automatic drawer will open that will take us back to assimilation, a situation that's very similar to what we're experiencing right now. And so I said that to say, we must be able to, as parents, identify when we stress, and when we take that stress and mingle it with fear, the only possible response is going to be a negative response. Whether it is, I like what someone said, whether we are verbal about it or distant. Sometimes we just, you know what, forget it. You don't want to do it? Fine. Walk away. And we got to identify when fear and stress, and it's blocking the feelings of what? Blocking the feeling of love. Two important terms, regulation and what? Dysregulation. I didn't realize before I had this training and before I caught on to this type of parenting, when my daughter was young, when she was just an infant, really, she would just cry. They call it colic. I still don't believe that. However, she would just cry and cry and cry. Anybody had a colic child is what they would call it. Just crying, crying. Nothing worked. Not nursing, not soothing, not walking, not singing. It just seemed like when they were ready to stop, they stopped. And I remember saying to her, regulate yourself. Regulate yourself. Regulate yourself. Regulate yourself. I'm doing a regulate yourself. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Jesus love you. This I know. I'm trying to say so. And who needed to be regulated? Who needed to be regulated? My husband can attest. I did all those things. Here, honey, you take her. Take her in the car. Okay? The ability to experience and maintain stress within one's window of tolerance, and I'll talk about what that looks like, basically staying calm, focused, and relaxed. And the number one physical thing we can do that would cause us to be calm and relaxed and focused, who can guess what it is? Yes, say it loudly. Breathe deeply. Yes, because what happens when the brain is stressed, oxygen, everything stops. You don't breathe. You inhale. You ought to stop doing this. And I tell you, if you do it again, I'm going to hurt you. And if I hurt you, oh boy, you're going to be in trouble. And we just breathing in and breathing in and inhaling. And we just need to stop and go. So let's do that right now, because I presented some stressful thing. Let's breathe in through your mouth, right? As much air as you can take in and blow it out slowly through your nose. And if you just do that three times, now your brain can think about what it is you really want to say or anything or do with your child. Just breathe. While they're doing what they're doing, you go, I remember doing this with my daughter. She was about 5 years old. She stopped. She said, Mommy, what are you doing? I said, I'm breathing. Yeah, I see you breathing, but like, why? I said, yeah, I'm just inhaling some fresh look on life. It helps. Dysregulation, we know what that looks like. That's when we are being stressed out. We are in a state of distress, and it will have a negative effect on how we interact with our children. So we must what? Regulate. We talked about what love looks like in action. Overcoming fear with love. And the scripture talks about it, right? Self-regulation. Galatians 5:3 said, gentleness, self-control, against such things there is what? There is no law. Dysregulation is when we lose it. He said, let us not lose heart in doing good. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, he says, but as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing well. So as parents, we cannot dysregulate and grow weary and doing well in parenting our children. He says, for Timothy says, what he has given has not given us the what? Spirit of, but of what? Power, love, and a sound mind. And power is not, I'm the adult, you do what I say to. You know, power is, I know what to do with this dutiness, this power, this authority that he has entrusted with me. I know how to regulate that authority. And I like how one leader teaches, said, I know how to be a servant leader. We must serve and lead our children and lead them well. So we got a list of love in action and what that looks like. Let's just take a look at that. What acceptance to add to it. Tolerance. Validation. How about engaging? Listening. Responsibility. Apology. Let me just park on that one, apology. And one of the things you learn about love-based parenting, as parents, apologize when you do wrong. I speak about apologizing as opposed to saying, I'm sorry. Who knows the difference? I'm sorry. And I apologize that I hurt your feelings when I yelled at you the other day. Which one works for you? I'm sorry I stepped on your foot. You know, it was wrong for me to step on your foot because I did it intentionally, because when you hurt me, I was trying to hurt you back. Which one works for you? So imagine doing that to your child. Have you? Who's admit that you've apologized to your child? It is a hard thing to do because traditional view says, I'm the parent. I'm never wrong. You're the child. Love-based says, love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not want to see the wrong, doesn't look for the wrong, doesn't keep a report of what's wrong. Love says, you know what? I was wrong for ignoring you when you called me. How can I be of help right now? That is so crucial to do it. And it's like the girl who was speaking. I went to her workshop. She said that when the moment, she said, this is the memory in my brain. I don't know how many of you was in that session. She said, I have a vivid memory of when my father apologized to me. She said, I was 13 or 14 years old. She said, I was going on and on and on about whatever it is I was going on about. And my dad stopped and said, you know what? I apologize. I was wrong for yelling at you. That stuck in her brain even today. She's 19 years old. Because now what would that do? That child says, you know what? Mom and dad mess up. And I'm teaching a lesson at the same time that says, and when I do, I'm going to admit that I'm wrong. That's life. So that's love in action. The Cheerio box. How many of you, my girls were young, it was Cheerios. Cheerios were everywhere. And when they couldn't get their Cheerios, I don't know about you, it was a hot mess. If I ran out of Cheerios, I made sure I got that big box. But when I ran, I remember vividly, who got my Cheerios? Why you take my Cheerios? Why can't I have Cheerios? I'm like, is this a cereal? I have cornflakes. Oh, that's not the same thing. Oh, you know, just 5 years just going on and on and on and on. Those are stressful moments. Because if I could, I would have ran out down to the local Walmart and at the midnight hour and got some Cheerios and make sure there was in the house. I knew that kind of reaction was going to happen. It's no different than if we take away, and this is go back to behavior modification, we take away all the electronics. Why can't I have my cell phone? Oh, why can't I do this? Or why can't I do my, I don't even know the name of these gadgets because my children don't have them. And they keep asking for them. I'm like, what is that again? Mom, I told you I want, what's the thing called? They play with the games with their hands. Yeah, they want a DS 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm like, they want the Wii 2. I'm like, I'm not buying. What? How much is the Wii 2? Oh my gosh, no way. But when you take away that, it's the same reaction. So whereas the Cheerios is something else, the same reaction. I want what I want, when I want it. And we overcome fear by love. And this is a paradigm. There's four principles in your handout we're going to cover. Real important. The ability to develop a relationship is dependent on a state of regulation. I must regulate. I must regulate. In order to regulate, I must know what stressed me out. I must know when I'm in a state of fear. Because if I don't know, then I cannot regulate. We just talked about without regulation, a child cannot connect in a relationship. It's all about relationship. It's not primarily about the behavior, because we've been addressing the behavior, and we've been addressing the behavior, and there's no change. Not significant change. It's like my daughter came to me Monday, and I had asked her, had she done some homework, and she, I think I'm teaching them too well on how to debate, because she said, she convinced me that she didn't have homework. I mean, it wasn't in her agenda. I don't know what they do in other states, but in Georgia, do y'all have agendas? They have to buy these agendas. I mean, it's like, I understand where they're going with it. And so it wasn't in her agenda. Let me see your agenda. And I said, okay. She said, I didn't have the homework. I didn't have the homework. I said, okay. It just seems odd that you in this magnet program, whatever, you don't have homework today. Okay. All right, fine. I signed it. 2 days later, she said, Mom, can I talk to you? She said, sure. She said, you know, when I told you that I didn't have any homework. Well, I really had homework. And they have to bring home couriers with all the homework, the graded scores, tests, exam, anything. And she said, and when you open up this courier, you're going to see a bad grade. And I just want to say, Mom, I'm so sorry that I lied to you. I had homework that day, and I didn't do the homework, and because I didn't do the homework, you're going to find a bad grade. But because I've been teaching my children, I've been working, I regulated myself, because I know my stress is, my mom says, you only bring home A grades. B's were okay, but you better not bring home a C, D, F. So I have to constantly watch it, that I'm not teaching that to my children. Only A's. Only B's. And some of you will look at me like, yes, A's and B's, that's it. And so I knew she had already warned me, well, I have a failing grade because I didn't do that homework. There's a relationship going on here. She was able to say, hey, Mom, I lied. This is what happened. These are the consequences. And I know you're going to be disappointed, but here's the courier anyway. And so when I opened up, I saw, it's okay. Okay. Thank you for being honest about lying. And I hope that we can work on you being more truthful and honest. And tell me, what was the reason why you didn't want to do the homework 2 days ago? I really wanted to play. I said, okay, so how can we get play into your schedule? I see play is important for you. So how can we get play in your day as opposed to me just saying homework? And so we talked about it. She was in the first grade and we did that. That's love-based parenting. I regulated myself. I've been teaching her regulation and how to, it's about relationship. So I have a relationship with my, at that time, 6-year-old. Why? Because I regulated, I taught her how to regulate, and she regulated. You know, if we don't have it, there's not a safe base for the child to connect to us. We want to create safety for our children. We are to be the safe base for our children. There's safety when I can come to Dad. There's safety when I can come to Mom. Sure, you know, they go to school, but that's not safety. That's school or dance or swimming or tennis coaches. You know, I was a former coach, and I'm telling you, the number of children that would connect to the coach, this is a sidebar. Coaches are your second research. I think Barna Research did a research that coaches are the second authority figure in a child's life. And it is true. I was a coach. They tell their coaches things they won't tell their parents. I didn't coach high school, I coached college. And the things they would share, they wouldn't tell their mom and dad. So I know they didn't do it in high school, because a high school coach will usually check on the child even after they left the high school program. Most high school coaches, they would still check on their players after they go to college. So know your coach. Know your children's coaches. Don't just give them to us. Know who I am. Know my belief system. Know my value system. And remind your child that you are still, this is the best relationship. Okay? That was a sidebar. So we are to be the safe base for our children in our relationship. So we got to regulate our thinking. We have to regulate our body, which means our responses. What am I thinking when there is lying, disrespect, when there is dishonesty? What am I thinking when there is aggression? What am I thinking? And then what am I thinking that's going to lead me to what I do? And how do I feel about it? So joy is the key to attachment. Keep it joy. Love, of course, is love-based parenting, but there's a joy in being a parent. Don't forget the joy. And especially mothers or dad, I would say also, when I first had my child, oh my God, we was just ecstatic because I had my first child at 40 and then the second at 42. So I was really ecstatic. I felt like Sarah. But there's, I mean, really, I remember the nurse even said, you know, you're pretty old and I don't know. But I'm like, you said what? I said, I'm just 40. Oh, but you're old and we need to do all these tests on you, ma'am. But there's a joy. That is the attachment, having that joy and letting that child know, your daughter know. There's a joy in being your parent. We got to do it once we regulate. So we join with our child by making, it's called a dyactic system, but it's just one-on-one. There's a one-on-one relationship going on. We interact and we co-regulate. Now, I'll talk about what that looks like. Attachment relationship is an interactive mechanism. We give, we give, we give, we give. And it creates a very high level of positive affect. That's a leading researcher, Dr. Scholl, has done research. So co-regulate. As I regulate, my child will also. If you ever done it, when you stay calm, that they may be a little erratic, pretty soon they'll just calm down because they realize, hold up, we're not having this negative feedback loop going on anymore. And then they'll stop and calm down too. It may take a day or two for them to realize, wow, mom was calm in that situation. And you can also regulate your child. So what's the ultimate question? This is it. What can I do at this very moment, right, to improve my relationship with my child? Notice it doesn't say, what can I do at this very moment to change my child's behavior? Does it not? Change behavior will come after there's a change in relationship. Change in behavior will come when there's a change in the relationship. Be committed to that you're going to love your child no matter what. And I've worked with families where the child is hitting the wall, where the child is hitting the parent, where the child is hitting the sibling. I've worked and I've seen it work, and it works when the parent regulates, when the parent begins to look at their own fear level and their own stress level. We must take a look at ourselves. So what we're going to do, this is what we're going to look at. We talked about that boundary versus consequences. So the red dotted line represents the boundary. There's lots of love, right? That the person, stick person is the child. And you see the big heart on the child. So everything is loving. What does that represent? Child did something wrong. Behavior. You name it, the child did something wrong. And so what happens is the child moves outside of the boundary, right? Why? Because they know what's going to happen. There's fear. Now we have what? There's a mother, but it could be a father. So the child is dysregulated and the mother is dysregulated. There's no love. So there's fear, right? There's no love, but there's fear. Child leaves. Mother is still dysregulated. Child dysregulated. And notice the child leaves out of the circle of the boundary. Because why? Because of consequences. Go to your room. We give consequences. Consequences really doesn't work. And trust me, what is needed? The love needs to return. And how is that love going to return? I must come as a parent with the love of Jesus and meet my child where he or she is in the moment. There's a way to do that. And it works every time. I can see your face going, yeah, right. I'm supposed to love when they're disrespecting me. I'm supposed to love when they're not doing their homework. I'm supposed, come on, Frida. You come on, girl. No, it works. And we're in restoration. We're the child and the parent. And love is the key. Traditional view, I'm in control. It's all about the behavior. You don't do it right, then you leave. But love is all about relationship. Relationship. Maybe about 25 years ago, I remember in the Christian community, I guess it came out of evangelism. People would say, are you a Christian? You said, no, that's a lifestyle. Now it's a lifestyle. Remember that? Whoever can remember that? Ooh, I'm telling my age, really. And the talk moved more towards lifestyle. Right? Christianity is not what I do. It's my lifestyle. So my relationship with my child is who I am. Not what I do as a parent, but who I am in a relationship with my child. So what does this look like? These are the seven behaviors that was identified through 25 years of research that parents struggle with the most. Lying, we just talked about that, right? Anybody relate to stealing? Hoarding, gorging, defiance, and aggression. Lack of eye contact. I find that a lot in our African-American communities. It is a cultural thing. I don't know if it's in any other community, but it was. I had to make, don't turn your head away from me, Frida. Look at me when I'm talking to you. Now, who wants to look at a mean mugging mama? Look at me when I'm talking to you, girl. I mean, who wants to look at that? It's all natural. The natural response is, I do not want to be a part of this. Oh, you're going to turn. And back in those days, I got spanking, whippings is what we call them in Mississippi, with extension cords and belts. I mean, I remember telling my mom, I think I was maybe 10 years old, you know what, mother, this is abuse, and I'm going to report you. She said, well, go right ahead. And I marched myself out of that house. I'm going to find the local authorities. But by the time I get two blocks down, I run into some friends, and we start doing what? Playing. 2 or 3 hours later, I come back home because I'm hungry. And I walk in the house. My mom said, so did you find the local authorities? And guess what was on my face? Uh-oh. Get in that, girl. I'm going to spank your tail. Okay? No. Lack of eye contact. And what's the last thing that's listed on there? Say it out loud, everybody. Hostile and angry parents. Yeah, we have to take a look at that. However we show anger, everyone is different. Remember your blueprint? For some of us, I can be verbal with that anger. Others, silent treatment. We won't talk to our children. We ignore them. They'll call us, we'll take our time answering. But it's still anger all the same. So those are the top behaviors. We're going to take a look at just a couple of the time that we have. Remember I talked about the window of tolerance, and this is about your stress. Child A, child B, they wake up in the morning, and this is what they look like. Two different children, they start off, the dark portion is where the child has this, they got this much to work with. So let's say this is their breaking point. So this child has this much to work with. So it means if mom is rushing and said, Candace, hurry up because I'm rushing. I got late. Y'all come on downstairs. So she has this much to work with. So she goes, okay, mom, sure. I'll hurry up and get dressed because I know you got to run to work. Heaven, on the other hand, wakes up and she has this much before she breaks. There you go again, mommy. Being late. You know I like to be late. And why are you coming here? That's not fair. And so she'll go into this thing. Right? Two different children, but their breaking point is different. Some of you are laughing. You have that, huh? You can relate to that. That much versus this much. He said in one child. Yeah. So what happens? We need to do something that will cause what? To bring that down. That could be the parent before placement. That could be the parents 2 years later. It could be the child of the parent. Someone's breathing. That's good. Because you could wake up, right? Yes, so you're the parent over here. You could wake up ready to go to work, but Heaven, one of my daughter's name, is not ready. Oh, you gonna get down, girl? You gonna make me late? There you go again. You always been late. Then I tell you to pack your bags before and pack this before. That's me sometimes. You should be able to do that. And my husband's going, regulate, Frida, regulate. I don't want to hear regulation. You regulate. So he'll turn it on me. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I need to regulate. Yeah, it could be us as well, right? We have to know our breaking point. The goal is we want to have this much space before we reach that level of stress. That's our window of tolerance. Okay, I'm going to skip through that. I talked about the memory. And I'm mentioning trauma and memory because I know there's trauma occurs in all of us. The obstetricians prove that even during birth, there's trauma. The baby going through the birth canal. And I didn't have natural birth. I had cesarean, even through cesarean, because there's a pulling and a tugging to bring forth the infant. And so everyone experienced trauma. What we must acknowledge is, what does that look like today? It could be just when you was birthed that you experienced a trauma, or it could be maybe you got bullied when you was 7 years old. That's trauma. Or maybe it was when you got put back in school and everybody else went to the next grade. That's trauma. Or it could be your parents divorced or separated. That could be trauma. Or there was a loss, which is definitely a trauma. Or it could be we find a lot in working with adopted families. There's definitely some trauma when you bring in that child and you do not know the history biologically, spiritually, any other way about that child. And in most cases, that child comes with some type of trauma, because just the very fact that my mother gave me up, because there is a connection, most of you know that, with the infant and the mother and even the father. So when that child is moved away, there's still a connection with that mother, if nothing but in spirit. There's still a connection with that family, and you're going to need to know what was that like. And even if working with foster parents as well, it's the same thing. As I heard someone has a foster child, you got to take a look at what does that look like, because everyone experienced trauma. And the way we respond, cognitive memory is basically, you know, I remember numbers and my social security number. You know, that's a cognitive level. And then you have the emotional level of memory, right? And that's, you know, something, you know, I remember my first boyfriend. Oh man, he was about 5'4" and I was 6 feet. Is that cute? I thought, wow, this little guy likes me. I was 12 years old, so I was in the sixth grade. I have an emotional attachment to that memory. I can say what he smelled like, you know. That's a, right? That's a, y'all laughing at me. Y'all got the same thing too. So that's emotional memory. And then there's a motor memory. And basically that is, you've been driving in your car to work the same route every day for the past 5 years, and you get to your parking lot of the building, you go, wow, how did I get here? It's just what? You just put it in automatic and you know how to get there. And that's motor. Now this is state, and I talked about that, Leonard. It's very important for you to remember this, because with each trauma that you experience, there's a state level that you go through, which means that I believe I'm experiencing the exact same thing when my dad left me. I believe I'm experiencing the same thing right now when my parents divorced. And even though that has been years ago, you're still what? You have all, it takes over the cognitive, emotional, and motor all put together, really what it does, and you respond as if you're in the same situation. They find that especially in anyone who's had any kind of abuse, whether physical, sexual, emotional, verbal abuse, they'll find that tremendous, and the brain goes straight to a memorization, a state level, and it responds. And so what happens is, at that door, you'll find yourself automatic going to automatic state. So when my daughter disrespects me, and I go, my first thought is, remember the behavior, my first thought is, nobody disrespects me. Right? That's my attitude and belief. I have an automatic response. Oh, you're not going to disrespect me. And who am I acting like? Take a guess. My mother. And even though I grew up saying, I am not going to be like my mom. She was just the meanest woman I ever knew. Oh, I am not going to spank my children. I'm not going to beat them with exception. Oh, no. Gosh. But what? That state memory kicks in. And the more it happens, the bigger it gets. And it almost overtakes us. And we find ourselves saying and doing things to our children that we go, oh, God, why did I do that? Why did I say that? We must acknowledge that there's a state level of memory that kicks in. And when we use love-based parenting, we can deal with that. So what we see on the outside is not right, what's really deep down. So we got to go deeper within ourselves first. It's just like the iceberg. What you see on the top is nothing compared to what you see on the bottom. And so we got to go deep and identify our fear and identify our stress so we cannot respond in a way that is harmful to ourselves and to our children. So final exam. Which parenting techniques foster secure relationship? Time out. Does that foster secure relationships in our children? There's a quiet over the room. Some of you have been watching Nanny Show, right? So what about time out? No. What about isolation? Does that foster a healthy relationship, secure relationship? Yes. No. If I isolate myself from my child, the child is going to grow up thinking that's how you handle things. You just walk away. You don't deal with it. I'm not important. You can't handle this, mom, dad. Spanking? There's different views on that. Not the kind that I got. Not with extension cords and paddles and buckles. No. The scripture says what? Train up a child. Right? What else? In the way he or she should go, he won't go far away from it. Now, what does train means? Teach. Point them in the direction they should go. How many of you ever had a trainer to help you with anything? Exercise, lose weight, gain weight, eat right. What's the responsibility of that trainer? Coach, what's the responsibility? They push you. What else they do? Stay on the path, be an example, teach you, keep you accountable. That's who we are. We are trainers. And we get to train them for longer than I had a personal trainer. You know, as long as I paid her, you know, I got my training. But when I couldn't pay, of course, my training was over. But that's it. It's the role of a trainer is to be there for you, is to encourage you, is to say that when you fall, I'm still with you. I'm going to help you through this, to be that example, keep you accountable, help you be responsible. That's what the scripture says. Train a child. And that training is for life. It looks different. Once I was able to get my muscles strong enough, I was able to do push-ups. All right. Then she gave me a different set of training instructions. And once I was able to do 100 sit-ups, she's, all right, great. Now we're going to add something to those sit-ups. Now I want you to do sit-ups this way. All right. Oh, now that you can lift 10 pounds, okay, we're going to add 20 pounds. You see how that works? And that's who we are as parents. We are the trainers. We stay with them and we believe in them all the way. consequences. We talked about that. All depends on how you want to use them, those consequences, but that is not the primary way. It's about building a relationship. So bottom, what we see is on this side is that what? It doesn't work. Talk about medication. Medication. I'm a licensed professional counselor. There is neurologists have proven there is such a thing that you might need medication, but I suggest a Christian psychiatrist and a Christian psychologist to make those determinations. And the reason why I put emphasis on someone who is a Christian, because they will walk with you through the biblical principles as it relates to psychiatry, as it relates to psychologists and medication. But not medication rather than modification. It's like the video that Rob showed us of the what was that thing called?
Stone,
right? I've seen that. Trust me, I've seen that. Unfortunately, I've seen where my parents would pretty much get their children on medication because they don't want to deal with it. You know, they want them stoned. But we see is what? It's understanding. Read that list off. I encourage you to do nothing else. Do this. 10 minutes when you first come home from work, if you're working outside the home, you spend 10 minutes with each child. You might want to start at 2:62, you know, but you'd be the determination of, it's basically when I first get home, I'm spending time with each child. Just sit down face to face. How was your day? What are you like? Not were you cooking and cleaning or you doing something else just with that child. Then you go 20 minutes at nighttime, bedtime. Once again, if you need to tweak the numbers, 5, 10, 5, that's great. Well, you're spending with that child before they go to bed, and then 5, 10 minutes in the morning. So if you do that, that's 40 minutes a day. Quality. Remember, the thing was quality time. That's 30, 40 minutes a day. That's 10, 20, 20. And tweak it if you need to, 5, 10, 5. But I encourage you to do emotional openness. Teaching our boys and our girls it's okay to have different feelings and what to do with them. Because throughout the scriptures, especially in the Psalms, we see where the psalmist experienced all kinds of emotions and feelings. Discipline, teaching, flexible, be flexible, and affection. Those are the foster. Various activities we can do to create secure relationship, talking, playing. How many of you still play with your children regardless of their age? Playing is so much. Now, I'm 6'2", my husband is 6'3", so my children are what? Pretty tall, right? My 9-year-old, who will be 9, is actually 5'9", wears a size 12 women's shoe. Now, my 8-year-old is 5'5", and she is the hyper, super active athlete. So it's nothing like running and jumping on us. It's nothing for her. You know, like I said, I'm 51. I said, Lord, now you gave me children at a late age, so you got to keep me physically straight, okay? Because I got one that she likes. Let's play in the dirt. Come on, let's play kickball. And so she has a habit of seeing you. Mommy, it's so great to see you. Woo! And expect you to catch her. So I'm like, okay. My 10-year-old, she said, Mommy, I can't do it anymore. You can't hold me. I said, go ahead. Because I told my husband, you know, she's 10. She doesn't look 10. I mean, she is 5 now. She doesn't look 10. She's developed. And I said, because I know she likes to play. I said, come on, run like you used to do. So, Mommy, I said, come on. I said, God, give me strength, Holy Spirit. And she did. She runs. She jumped. And now, I mean, come on. She's here on me. So she jumps and I hold it like, all right, great, great. Woo, yeah, way to go, girl. I still love you. Right? Play is still important. Tickling. They love it. They still love it. Have fun, joy, time together. I like this. Giving your child his or her story. As often as possible, tell your child their story. They love to hear. When you was a little girl, and when you was 5, when you was 4, when you was 2, they just love it. I tell it over and over and over again. And they just love to know their story. And it says to them, well, I'm important. All right? You're going to go from surviving to thriving. We're going to no longer just survive with what's going on in our homes with our children ourselves. We're going to thrive. And the way we thrive, we must be emotionally fit. And that is acknowledging where I'm at. What are my stressors? Okay? Become a master of love. The scriptures are there for us. I'm going to utilize the love passages in my life with my children daily. Okay? And be more in the moment. Right there in the moment. If your child is 10 and they're acting and you might say, you're acting like you're 5 years old. That's a clue. Relate to me like 5. That's not an insult. Another parent came to my office, and her daughter, you know, she was 11, and she said, well, she wants to sit on my lap. I keep telling her, you're too old to be sitting in my lap. You know, come on, you're 11 years old now. You're developing. This was the mother saying it. And I said, so you think she's acting five because she wants to sit in your lap, right? Yes. Let her sit in your lap. Oh, but she's 11. You said she's acting five. Let her sit in your lap. She's letting you know, I still need to be attached to you, Mom. I still need a place of security, a place of safety, and it's safe in your lap. Now, men may struggle with their daughters if they're getting older and they're developing. You may struggle with, I don't think she should sit in my lap. Then do put side by side. She just want to be near you to say, Dad, I feel safe when I'm right here beside you. And some girls may still want to hug their dad, and you go, whoa, 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 what's that? Whoa, way, all right, all right. Daddy, all right, hey, how are you doing? All right, yeah, Daddy love you, you know. You know, you got to be okay with that. And I teach men, if you do this, if you don't want to, you know, you cross, I call it a crossbow, and you just hug, so your daughter is here, and, you know, but that's a reality. Your daughter is growing, and she's, you know, developing. But they feel secure. If they still want to just, my daughter's 11, she still wants to just come, can we just come lay in your bed? Okay, sure. I got to erase that thought that my mom said, do not mess up my bed. We couldn't do that with my mom. And she made her bed was nice and neat, ooh, pretty and smooth. You could not sit on her bed. And so I go, no, I'm in the moment with my child right now. She wants it. And they'll just come and sit in bed, and we'll restore it. Still at 10 and 8 years old. Okay, so stay in the moment. Parenting children with difficult behaviors will move you from just surviving to thriving. Just, I want to take the last few moments we have and just do a brief illustration. Anybody want to come in and show this how to work? You want to be your child, and I can show you how to use this love-based parenting technique. Pretend it's somebody else's child, you know, the neighbor down the street, daughter, who, you know. All right, come on, ma'am. You give me the scenarios. It's in the house. It's in the kitchen. Come on up while you talk. Thank you. Your name is?
Carrie.
Come on, give Carrie a hand. For bravery and courage.
Okay. Okay. It's in the dining room, and his little brother, he's 8, and it's Nathan. His little brother, Aaron, finds his toy broken, and Nathan lies and says, Dad stepped on it. Okay, Dad's at work.
Okay. You know? Oh, wow, okay.
Okay, so, but he comes, he announces it with nobody's asking him about what happened. He just comes, oh, AJ, come look at your toy. It's broken. Dad stepped on it, and here I come. I'm like, if your dad stepped on it, you know, that's me. You know,
just show us you. Show us you.
Oh, okay. I say, Nathan, if your dad stepped on it, I'm trying to use logic with him.
Okay.
Okay, if your dad stepped on it, he would have told, you know, he would have felt it, number one. He would have told AJ. You know, we'd apologize to AJ, and we would know it, or somebody would know it. Or Nate, you would have said something to your dad, because Nathan likes to kind of boss, you know. Daddy, you stepped on AJ's stuff. And so, but Nathan brings it in the kitchen nicely and puts it down. His dad did it. And I said, I should call him and ask him. And I said, if I do call him, and he says, no, you're going to be in trouble. And Nathan's like, well, I know because I said, did you see him? Well, I was in the other room. But I know he did it because I heard it, you know. So then he starts, like, confabulating all this stuff. And
okay. Y'all breathe with her, right? Everybody
know,
breathe out.
Every day, because I homeschool. I'm with them all the time.
So, okay. All right. He's going to be all right.
That's a scenario every day.
All right. So here we go. So we see how she responds. Y'all got Nathan, right, with the toy. He comes, right? And so mom originally would have responded with logic. Doesn't make any sense. Let me call Dad and verify this, right? Logic and control.
With a bit, little bit of emotion there, too.
We picked that one up, though, didn't we? So now I'm going to be Mom, and you're going to be Nathan.
Okay.
All right, bring the toy. Okay. I'm in the kitchen.
Nathan, this is your...
No, you're Nathan.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Right?
Yeah, I'm saying AJ. Okay. Oh. AJ, this is... I'm talking to AJ. This is your Joshua, or whatever, your Moses, and Daddy stepped on his hand and broke it. I'm going to put it right here. And, you know, so I know Dad did it because I saw him do it.
Nathan, mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. I love you. Everything's going to be all right.
why it really happened. So
no, you're Nathan.
No, I'm saying it really happened. No, he's not trusting that I really believe him.
Yeah, I love you, Nathan. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right.
But and because Dad did it.
Yeah. You're really concerned about that toy, aren't you?
Well, yeah, because AJ let me play with it, and yeah.
Yeah.
But I was in the other room when it happened.
Yeah. What are you afraid of right now? You seem like you're scared, son. You okay?
I don't want to whoop it.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't do it.
Yeah, you don't think I'm going to whoop. You think my mommy's going to whoop you?
Or if you tell Dad, then when Dad gets home, he's not going to like that.
So I really scare you when I call Dad and threaten you. That really scares you?
Well, not when you call Dad. Probably if you don't call Dad.
Really? That scares you when I don't call Dad?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because that means you're going to handle it.
Yeah. And when I handle it, I'm pretty rough on you, aren't I?
Yeah.
Wow. I never knew that I really made you afraid like that. You know, I love you. And I'm going to do a better job at not making you afraid. It's going to be all right. Okay, son? It's going to be all right. What did that feel like?
Acceptance. Because he does that all the time. I mean, you know, so I think give him a chance to admit it. But I'm telling you, it's going to take some work because he still would be talking about it. But I still didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, yeah. Time. Thank you.
At the National Center for Biblical Parenting, we have a number of practical resources for you. This presentation that you've just listened to is only one of many that we have to offer you.
We'd like you to visit us on the web at biblicalparenting.org and find some more resources to strengthen your family.